It's simple. It's dumb. It's the podcast. Podcast. Since it's Father's Day, at least here in the U.S., we have a special Father's Day episode planned. As you might have guessed, in this episode, we're actually speaking with Jason's dad, Jerome Lytle.
We went to Reno when I was a kid. We saw a lion with closed eyelids. It was at MGM. Was it MGM? It was ridiculous. We felt so sorry for him. It was at MGM. Was it MGM? My dad got teary-eyed in front of his new girlfriend.
Jerome Lytle is Jason's father. Within the Granddaddy Online community, Jerome has been a steady presence throughout the years, proudly supporting his son's music career by helping with special DVD releases and by sharing rare clips from his YouTube channel. With Jerome, we will talk all about Jason's childhood, his pursuits, and what it was like to parent someone like Jason. Oh, and we will do our best to press him on what his favorite song of Jason's is. Let's just jump right into it. Here's my conversation with Jerome Lytle. Can you describe Jason's early childhood and any interest in music that he had back then?
Jason's interest in music, I guess it was derived from being around the house. I know when he was 7 or 8 years old, I recall him playing a drum on a Quaker oak box and things like that, just kind of like a rhythm thing. And he probably picked up a lot from my wife Stacy, because she used to be a DJ, and so she was bringing records home. Because we like to listen to music, and then we were using vinyls, so we had a Gerard turntable, and at that time Jason probably wasn't really into the mechanics of it, but he, you know, at 7 or 8 years old, he still seemed to be musically inclined somehow.
Y'all had a piano in the house, obviously, and so he ended up being at least somewhat musically inclined, I'm guessing, in his teen years.
Yeah, that was in his teen years, yeah.
Right.
I remember when I was in the service, I bought this was back in the 60s, I bought an Akai tape recorder when I was over in Hong Kong, and brought it home, and we played around with that a lot, and he probably saw that going on, and he, you know, was interested in things like that. And then when he was a little later, in his 8 or 10 years old, 12 years old, something like that, he was really into Kiss. He was a Kiss fanatic. He had Kiss stickers and everything all over the place. And so that was, I remember that was one of his main groups that he was after. And then later on in life, and he got into more like the ELO and then we bought him some, you know, Casio piano, you know, these electric pianos, and he kind of played around with those, and he was into, you know, and then when he was about 10 or 11, we moved to a place, and the neighbor had a Rogers drum set. It was a full-size drum set, and he was about a little older than a teenager, but he and Jason used to get together a little bit, and Jason finally saw his drum set and he wanted it. So the guy was going to sell it, so we bought him the drum set. And from that day on, he kind of just like took off. I would imagine he was in his maybe 8, 10, 12 years old, something like that.
In addition to ELO, and Jason has some very eclectic influences. He has old country favorites like George Jones, Merle Haggard, and Waylon Jennings, whom he still covers from time to time. But he also is a follower of some of the classical composers like Brahms, Beethoven, and Chopin. How do you explain someone from Modesto in the 70s and 80s would even really discover these artists, let alone be influenced by them at such a young age?
I don't exactly know for sure where he came up with the Tchaikovsky stuff, or you know, the long-haired classical music. Like I said, when I had my tape recorder, there wasn't many rock and roll songs in the '60s that So I mean, there was some out there, but I mean, the early '60s. I mean, and so I used to buy some stuff off Columbia Music House, and he might have heard some of the. I had some classical stuff that I played. I don't know for sure if he picked it up from there, but. The Western music now, I'm not sure where, you know, he just obviously just enjoyed listening to that kind of music. Some of the Western music he really got into by himself. I didn't, and we didn't listen to Western music ourselves, so I'm not quite sure where he got that.
Oh, I see. Tell us something we may not already be aware of about Jason's youth.
After, you know, Jason was really into motorbiking or motocross, not motorbiking, but motocross. It was pedal bicycles, and I used to drive him to the bike tracks. He was around 12, 13, like that. And so he was into biking before he was into skateboarding, kind of, but about the same time, I guess. And then he got more into skateboarding, I guess, because he had more friends doing that. And it was more popular, started happening too.
Early on, Jason was heavily into skateboarding. He even turned professional with a sponsor. And then right after that, I think he had a knee injury that really took away that potential career path overnight. With that gone, he seemed to put all of his time and energy into music. And as his father, how did you initially react to these two career paths that are obviously quite unconventional that Jason pursued?
Yeah, I was a little skeptical, like everybody else with their kids. You know, they wanted to make sure they had a job and they grew up and were able to take care of themselves and things like that.
I mean, I can imagine, I have four kids myself. And so one of my kids was, you know, into skateboarding, okay, that's a great hobby, but really, is it a career? And then when it gets taken away from an injury, even though I obviously am not, you know, feel sorry for him for that love being taken away, I'm at least maybe in the back of my mind thinking, okay, now he's going to have a more proper career. And instead, he turns to music. That had to be somewhat of a shock, I guess.
Yeah, I'm you know, Jason was just, he was kind of a loner kind of a kid. He spent a lot of time in his room. And he did a lot of introverted things like playing around with his keyboards. And I'm not exactly sure when he picked up a guitar, but he was into, you know, the Casio type, you know, boards. And I just don't know, you know, for sure when he picked up the music thing, because he was into everything all the time. You know, he was into the music, he was into the biking, he was into skateboarding, and he spent a lot of time in his room just practicing all the time. He got a guitar, and then he would just sit in there and practice and practice. So, yeah, and then it went from there. You know, he went out and tried to find jobs. You know, he worked at a couple places, and at the same time, he was trying to do his music thing, too. So, you know, I was a little skeptical about his future and if he was going to be able to make it in the music industry because it was so competitive. And you know, we didn't have any connections with anybody, you know, that he could really get with and get advanced through that industry. So he did it all himself. I don't see that anybody helped Jason but Jason. Mostly, he just dug in and got it done, and I was really proud of that. I know there was a time or two when he and I would talk about his future, and I even, you know, gave him a job at the. We used to manage a flea market in drive-in theater in flea market, and he worked there for us for a while as a server behind the counter and serving food, which he didn't like very well, but he did it because he needed, you know, the extra money and whatnot, but always continued with his music, and that was his main goal.
You mentioned Jason being somewhat of a loner. Did he have any close relationships with others when he was growing up?
Well, he's got a stepbrother named Garth. Nick, he goes by DG Balazs. And Garth used to drive Jason around a lot in his youth. And he did a lot of filming of Jason skateboarding. And he and even Garth and I used to go to, we went to Charlie's and filmed some of the stuff he did in Charlie's in Modesto. And so Garth was pretty close to Jason in his growing up. And he influenced Jason somewhat. He probably got him in more trouble than Jason needed to. But anyway, Garth was probably one of Jason's mentors in his youth. But as they grew older, Jason kind of, they had completely different personalities. Garth wasn't into music, and he was, and Jason was, so they went different ways. But that's what I can remember mostly, because, like I said, Garth, he was kind of a, he was an instigator, a motivator, and he did get Jason going on this and that. But
You obviously became a very proud supporter of your son's music career. I mentioned your YouTube channel. You have loads of early videos from Jason's career that and you've interacted with fans online that I've seen on countless occasions. At what point did you realize that, Jason, he's going to be able to make a career out of music and really embrace the path that he had chosen for himself at that point?
I don't know when I really thought that he was going to make it, but I always thought he would, but I wasn't sure. I always was skeptical because I was worried about him, getting out there and getting a job and getting a long, let's say getting a job you could retire at or get benefits from or those kind of things. Because I was in a business, a grocery business, and I had retirement and all that stuff built up, and I was concerned that Jason wouldn't. But when he finally came out with some of those CDs, then I thought, well, maybe he does have something going on here. He is making music and somebody's listening to him. So, and then there was a time when we talked, and we were, I, he was just wasn't sure what kind of music he really wanted to play, I don't think, and he was playing some hard rock. Play some other type of music, and I kind of liked his other music other than the hard rock music. I liked his indie music, and he ended up, I told him one day, I said, Jason, you ought to play music that everybody can listen to, not just these hard rockers. So I don't know if that had any bearing on anything, but he did start playing a lot of musical music instead of just like the hard rock bang clang stuff, And then I really enjoyed his music, and I think he kind of, went that way, and it turned out.
So I can recall two Granddaddy songs that include specific references to you. The first one called MGM Grand, which he talks about a family trip to the Reno MGM Grand and feeling sorry for the MGM lion that was on display there at that time. And the second one called I'm in Love with No One, where he has specific lyrics about watching you listen to one of his recordings from afar and wondering what you would think of it. I was curious, when Jason was writing songs like these, did he look to you as a potential sounding board if it had any quality, or was there was this more about him maybe seeing getting you to show some, that he had some potential in this music path that he was taking?
Well, I don't know if he used me as a sounding board. He might have done that beyond my knowledge. Throw it out there at me and see how I reacted. I kind of remembered a little bit about you were saying that I was sitting in my truck and he playing a tape and he was watching me. I don't recall that specifically, but I was amused by that. And some of his first music I was a little skeptical about because it was different. I'm older, you know. I was older than him, and I wasn't into that music exactly yet. So I was into more of the, you know, the classic rock and stuff like that. And so when he came out with all this new stuff, it was I was a little skeptical, but he didn't use me as a sounding board too much. He did his own thing. And I can't say that I was an influence on what he does or did. I don't know. It's up to him, but I wouldn't say that.
What song did you pick as your favorite Jason Lytle song, and why?
I've thought about this in great detail. And I really, really, I know you're going to say, well, but I really can't pick a favorite song. I've got so many favorite songs of Jason, starting from 1990s, you know. And I really can't. I can, you know, I can name, you know, Rearview Mirror and some of those earlier songs. I really, really liked them. And Jed's Other Poem, The Humanoid, you know, Beautiful Ground. Some of those songs are still just my favorites, but even the newer ones now, you know, I mean, some of this new stuff, like the Department of Disappearance, some of those songs too are just my favorites. I've got so many favorites, I can't name any of them actually. I can name them, but there's too many up there in my head. In my head, I'm getting a little older now, so I'm not quite as good at that, remembering a lot of stuff, so.
Okay, so which song would you like us to play then?
Let's see. I would say Beautiful Ground is one of my favorites.
Apparently before Jed had left us, he wrote some poems, wrote them for no one. But I guess I'll show them. Here's one of Jed's poems.
I will say, and I'm not lying, but Beautiful Ground is my favorite. That was number one on my Twitter project thing that I had listed out. So I wholeheartedly agree with you.
There's other songs on that same album that are my favorites too, but I think Beautiful Ground is probably my favorite.
He said I'd wake up dead drunk alone in the park. I called you a liar, but how right you were. Air conditioned TV land, 20 grand, walk to the bank. The shakes from the night before, stare at the tiki floor.
I think what I like about that song specifically is that the album version's terrific, but the way that he plays live and he can transition from piano to a guitar version of a specific song, it really shows how flexible and versatile he is with his music. And there's still so much emotion, and it's just maybe translated slightly differently in how he's playing it or what instrument he's using to play the song.
Yeah, the piano version is really great too, that he's just done recently.
Right.
The one he did in Texas at the record store.
I try to sing it funny like Beck, but it's bringing me down, lower than ground, beautiful ground, beautiful ground.
I was actually there in person that night in Texas.
Oh, were you?
That's where I live, is in Texas.
Yeah, I actually recorded that off of my download, and I made a DVD out of it, which I keep. I did a lot of DVD stuff over the years. I was into photography and video. We did a lot of weddings and stuff after I retired from the grocery business. So we were happy to be able to do a lot of Jason's music and really enjoy. I've got lots of CDs and DVDs I've made from his music.
Yeah, I think my favorite one on your YouTube channel is a show in 2009 at the Partisan.
Yes.
And the sound in that one is incredible, and I thought the performance was obviously great too.
Yeah, but... you know, my camera on that, I have a really nice high-definition camera, but my sound, I clipped all the sound because it was so loud in there, and I had my mic turned up too loud. There was another gentleman there, off the top of my head, I can't remember his name too, but he had recorded that also digitally. And I got a hold of him when I wanted to do the DVD, and he sent me the music, and I hooked it up with my video, and it came out perfect. And so I'll have to, you know, on my DVD itself, I credited him at the end for the music because of the great job they did recording that.
Yeah, I still watch those clips on your YouTube channel every once in a while. It's so great.
Beautiful ground. Beautiful ground.
That brings us to the end of this special episode. Thanks to Jerome for speaking with me about your son, Jason. I hope you have a great Father's Day. Since it is Father's Day, I had planned to include a short conversation with my own kids about Granddaddy, but unfortunately, and maybe as expected, it was a complete train wreck. The short summary is that my youngest two, my 5-year-old and 3-year-old, like a couple of songs, Nature Anthem, which they'll sing and dance to, and Where I'm Anymore, because they like the meow meow chorus. The older two, who are 15 and 12, have an unhealthy dislike of Jason's music, primarily because they've heard way too much of it over the years. Oh well, at least we got in a great conversation with Jerome. Tune in for our next episode, where we'll speak with another of Jason's friends, this one sharing stories from over 20 years ago. We'll go out with the back half of Beautiful Ground from the Partisan show that Jerome and I were discussing earlier. Happy Father's Day, everybody. Call your dad if you still can.